You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The collection continues. A year after signing former 2013 lottery pick Michael Carter-Williams, Rockets GM Daryl Morey is continuing to add to his stockpile of 2013 reclamation projects here in 2019. First came power forward Anthony Bennett on a non-guaranteed deal a couple of weeks back, and now comes swingman Ben McLemore on a mostly non-guaranteed deal as of today. To discuss the implications for the Rockets roster moving forward, well, that's what we're going to be doing today here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. In today's show, on this Tuesday, July 23rd, we're going to be looking at why the Rockets did these two moves and where exactly they might fit in. Now, to be clear, Anthony Bennett was signed a couple of weeks ago. We've mentioned him on the program, but it came the day after they traded for Russell Westbrook or announced the trade. It was the same day that they came to an agreement with Tyson Chandler. So certainly it was easy for even a former number one overall pick, which Anthony Bennett was in that 2013 draft, to get lost in the shuffle. However, now that you're adding the number 7 pick in the 2013 draft, which was Ben McLemore out of Kansas, and now adding him to the number 1 overall pick from that draft in Anthony Bennett, all of a sudden, when you're looking at the end of that Rockets bench in the upcoming season, there's a little bit more intrigue, at least from a talent perspective. So we didn't dive too much into Anthony Bennett, spent a little bit of time in our show with Matt Moore last week asking about him. But today, I want to look further down the bench, beyond the headlines, because we're still somewhat in the Westbrook afterglow. We're still awaiting the press conference. I know Daryl Morey, he was on vacation for his anniversary this weekend. He's back in Houston. So is Mike D'Antoni. Everybody's waiting on Russ to get back here and for basically all three of those guys to be under the same roof at the same time. It should be coming relatively soon. The trade is, of course, official. But in terms of press conferences, it's not at all uncharacteristic for these to drag on for a while. After all, the Clippers and Kawhi Leonard, that deal was done almost a week before the Rockets and Westbrook, yet they're not having their press conference until Wednesday the 24th. So this is really not all that long of a wait in the grand scheme of the NBA offseason. This is the 2 or 3 months out of the year that the players are able to do other things with their family, their friends. So be patient, it's coming. And of course, we'll turn our attention back to Russ once we hear what he says, why he's in Houston, why this was what he wanted to do, and of course, from a 30,000-foot view, how Russell Westbrook fits in, that's going to be what determines whether the 2019-2020 Rockets are capable of winning an NBA championship. However, we've discussed that a lot lately, so today I want to turn our attention further down that bench and look at some of these value pickups that Daryl Morey has added over the last couple of weeks, first Anthony Bennett and now Ben McLemore. And the important place that I think we should start from is with the understanding that they're probably not going to work out, at least from a rotation or better standpoint. I think you should take any success they have in terms of rotation minutes as a pleasant surprise. There's a reason these guys were bust, Bennett in Cleveland, McLemore in Sacramento. There's a reason why they were available not just for the minimum, because we're now in the bargain hunting phase of free agency, but for mostly non-guaranteed deals. There's a reason for that. The deck is stacked against them. Now, you can hope that with a better system, more culture, better teammates in Houston than they've ever had in their other situations, that this could put them in a much better position to succeed. Clearly, it gives them some chance, and there's certainly a talent base from which to work with. That's why they were top 7 picks in the first place. However, we have to be real going in that there's a reason why they were available for what they were available for. Generally, you get what you pay for in the modern NBA marketplace. However, Ben McLemore, this is someone who, limited sample size of 19 games, but he shot 42% from behind the three-point arc last year. He's got the length, the quickness, the athleticism to be a pretty good defender. The results have been mixed, but the tools are certainly there. He can shoot, the catch-and-shoot numbers are quality, and so maybe he can't be a star, which in Sacramento for the majority of his career. That's what he's been asked to be, or at least that's what they've been trying to develop and unlock out of him. But perhaps he's a guy that if you redefine his role and put him in as a complementary piece where he can focus just on shooting threes and defending, that now that he's in his mid-20s and a little bit more mature, maybe something can click. This is the type of project that I think Daryl Morey, certainly low floor but high ceiling, this is something that he's known for. This is his approach to the game. But you can see why that he would have intrigue. And unlike a year ago with Michael Carter Williams, there's at least a path to which these could work out. That's what encourages me. With Michael Carter Williams, even though he was a talented player, former Rookie of the Year, of course he was in that same 2013 lottery, no matter what his overall skills were, the fact that he could not shoot, and yet he was being placed in a system in Houston that around Mike D'Antoni and James Harden prioritizes shooting above all else, needs it for spacing. Of course, they take more threes than anyone else in the league by far. It was always tough to see, even if Michael Carter Williams was ultimately going to become a good NBA player again, and he was at least serviceable in Orlando after the Rockets let him go, it was tough to see where the fit was in Houston. At least with McLemore and Bennett, and Bennett doesn't have the track record of NBA success in regards to his jump shot, but at the G League level last year, he was really, really good as a shooter. That's at least a base from which you can see their path to NBA success. Again, I think it's less likely than likely that they're rotation players simply because when you factor in guys that have been bouncing around the league for 5-6 years, have had lots of other opportunities, and they're available for very minimal guarantees, and the minimum, even if they do make it through training camp and onto the final regular season roster, again, you have to keep your expectations in check. There's also a mental toll that comes from being a relative bust compared to your draft hype. Matt Moore talked about this when I asked him about Anthony Bennett last week, and that can be hard for guys of that stature to overcome. There are a lot of reasons to be skeptical, and I think it would be silly to look at either of these two and say, wow, this guy is definitely going to be a rotation player. Daryl Morey's done it again in terms of finding the next Daniel House or the next Jim on the market, whoever it may be. He's done it a lot in his 13 years in Houston. You can't say it's not going to happen. However, I also wouldn't count on it as an inevitability. I think we need to go into this with a fairly level-headed approach and understand the odds. With that said, the talent is intriguing. Both guys can shoot. When it comes to Bennett, 6'8", 245 pounds, it actually wouldn't surprise me if he's somewhat of a Kenneth Faried replacement. He might be an inch shorter, but a guy who certainly has the physique at close to 250 pounds, the athleticism. We saw last year that when Nene got his maintenance games or they decided a matchup that wasn't really well suited for him, then oftentimes they didn't want to turn to Isaiah Hartenstein, who's so young. Now, granted, Isaiah is still an option, but many times they wanted more athleticism. That's what Anthony Bennett, in theory, could provide you, a smaller, quicker option that can space the floor. 2 years ago, we saw at times in the playoffs, they had Ryan Anderson as their backup five after it became clear that Anderson was a bit too slow-footed to be a four alongside Capella or Nene. Then what you did see at times was them using Ryan Anderson as a stretch five. That's what I could see Bennett potentially being in this system, a guy, if he pans out, that when Tyson Chandler either needs a maintenance game or because he's a bit slow-footed in year 19, they think the matchup is just not as conducive to a more traditional big, then maybe you want more versatility, a stretch big. Now, Faried, he did develop his three-point shot a little bit last year, but I don't think he was ever as solid with it as Anthony Bennett, at least based on the G League level, is. Bennett's a guy who certainly has three-point range, but the mid-range game, he's comfortable with the pick and pop, and so I could see the Rockets looking at him as they're next in line in regards to a slightly undersized big. You can go back 3 years ago and look at how Mike D'Antoni used Montrezl Harrell. And I think if he pans out, it wouldn't shock me to see the Rockets looking at him as potentially a small ball five they can use as a contrast to Tyson Chandler. With McLemore, who's 6'5", 6'6", I think he's the latest in their line of wing players because we know in the backcourt, you've got Russell Westbrook, you've got James Harden, you've got Eric Gordon and Austin Rivers behind them. Now, some of those are going to play minutes at the three as well. But right now, it's the three and the four spots. Daniel House, PJ Tucker, probably Eric Gordon some. He was your starter at the three last year. In theory, they could do that as well. But then you don't really have a lot of proven options behind them. You do have Gerald Green, but I think at 34 years old, the Rockets would love it if someone that was more established was able to take some of those minutes, or at least someone that's younger and with a bit more upside than a mid-30s Gerald Green. That could be where Ben McLemore comes into play as someone with a similar skill set in regards to being able to shoot from behind the three-point arc with the defense and the versatility. Now, I know there are questions about him. He's going to need to kind of redefine his game to go from the star that a lot of people wanted him to be his first few years in the league to now hopefully adopting a mentality that he can come back in and be a 15 to 20 minutes per game role player. Again, it's not likely that it's going to work, but you can at least see the path. The talent is there. This is why he was a high draft pick. And for the Rockets, I think it's important for Daryl Morey, when you look at the 9, 10, 11, 12 spots on the roster, whoever they end up being, you don't want them all to be high floor, low ceiling. What you want is a mix. For example, I mentioned the last couple of years, they've had Nene and Tyson Chandler as your backup center. Well, yeah, you also try and offset those with guys who have a bit more upside. I mentioned potentially Anthony Bennett, but the last couple of years. Certainly Isaiah Hartenstein has been in the mix. Montrezl Harrell a couple of years before that. So you want to have a balance between veterans and higher ceiling types. That's how you constantly keep your pipeline ready. And maybe you hit on one of these guys. And certainly the Rockets hit on Harrell. Now he was a big part of the trade that got them Chris Paul. And 2 years later, Chris Paul turned into Russell Westbrook. So it's not like Harrell's value was overlooked or not utilized by Houston. It just went via trade rather than always what he could provide on the court. But I think if you're the Rockets, not all of these guys are going to be able to play that much. So while some of them, you need the veteran stability, guys like Gerald Green, guys like Tyson Chandler, you also want some guys that are younger, have more upside, and thus have a higher ceiling, the low floor, high ceiling. You want a blend of those guys. And so that's where I think Ben McLemore and Anthony Bennett come into play. There's no guarantee that it's going to work out, but at least unlike Michael Carter-Williams a year ago, the tools are there, specifically the shooting. And really, in the case of both of these guys, you can see a template with Anthony Bennett, the more athletic shooting-oriented fives that the Rockets have had, their third centers over the past couple of years. We've talked about a few of them over the last few minutes. With McLemore, of course, you can point to Daniel House, who the Rockets developed, a similar body type. Maybe Gerald Green, who, of course, is older in his NBA life cycle, but someone that, at least in terms of his skills, is not totally different from what the Rockets are hoping to unlock out of Ben McLemore. So you can at least see the template for what the Rockets are hoping to unlock. And in many cases, they can actually point to guys on the roster they have successfully developed. And you hope that one, or if you get lucky, somehow both of McLemore and Bennett can follow those guys and turn into the next generation of internal replacements. That's probably a best case scenario. Again, the odds are unlikely in any of these that it's going to work out at a rotation or better level. That's just how it is. But at least in 2019, unlike in 2018 with Michael Carter-Williams, you can see the talent and the X's and O's rationale for why Daryl Morey would do this and what the fit might be in Houston. All right, welcome back to Locked On Rockets. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose. We spent the first segment looking at the Rockets' latest wave of low-floor, high-ceiling reclamation projects, those being Ben McLemore and Anthony Bennett, two of the top seven picks in the 2013 NBA draft. Guys that have been relative busts to this point in their NBA career, but they're each going to report to training camp with the Rockets and hopefully now surrounded by really good talent, one of the true contenders in the league, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, that might be able to bring a bit more out of these guys. McLemore signed earlier Tuesday by the Rockets. Anthony Bennett, that deal was agreed to a couple of weeks before, actually just the day after the Rockets initially agreed to the Russell Westbrook trade. So we're looking at both of these guys today. And one reason why I believe Daryl Morey is prioritizing these types of low floor, high ceiling prospects is that you want a blend. Some of the guys on their bench, Gerald Green, Tyson Chandler, you have a certain floor with these types, but there's also a limited ceiling. Based on age and other factors, they are what they are. So you really don't want, when you're looking at spots, I'd say 8 through 12 on your active roster, for them all to be either too young or too old. What you want is a blend because, of course, at various points over a season, you need different things. And more importantly, just from a roster building perspective, of course, you do need a few guys that are high ceiling, and hopefully you hit on some the way you did with Daniel House Jr. a year ago. but you also need to hedge with guys who are more established and you feel that can pick up that role if the higher upside guy doesn't work out. For example, as the roster is currently constructed, I think the Rockets would love it if Ben McLemore won that final 3-and-D rotation spot, number 9 in the rotation, off that bench. However, I think it helps that they have Gerald Green, who officially re-signed on Monday, available as a hedge. In case McLemore doesn't work out, then even though Green is a bit older, here's someone you can plug in and should be a good fit immediately. So you need that blend. The other reason why I think Houston went down this path is because the more proven options on the market, quite frankly, the Rockets don't have as easy a sales pitch as many seem to think. And the reason I think with regards to the bigger names, and we've mentioned a few in recent episodes, guys like J.R. Smith, Luke Bamute, if he's healthy, Vince Carter. I speculated about a number of these on my Twitter timeline at Ben Dubose as well. In theory, these could be really accomplished options, put these veterans into a contending locker room in Houston, and given the fact that both McLemore and Bennett have very small guarantees, if at all, the Rockets still could pivot back and pick up one of these guys if they think one of these is ready to sign in Houston, that they're a really good fit. If there's a match, they could still do that. However, the issue for Houston, in my opinion, is that the roster is actually a little bit deeper than most of us give it credit for. And the real difference, in my opinion, was the trade of Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook. Because where this changes everything is through the lens of durability. Russell Westbrook averages, in the last 4 years, he's played 80 or more games 3 times. The 1 year he didn't, he played, I believe, 73, so he has not missed more than 10 games in a season in a very long time. He's had a few injuries, but when it comes to NBA games, he's pretty much an Iron Man. We know that James Harden is as well. By contrast, Chris Paul missed nearly 25 games each of the last 2 seasons. More than that if you factor in the playoffs, unfortunately. So when you look at both the minutes limitations, Westbrook not only plays, but he averages about 36 minutes per game every season. Chris Paul, because of his age, 34, and propensity for soft tissue injuries, you limit him to about 30 to 32 minutes per game. But more than that, there's the roughly 25 games, close to a third of the season, that you just know going into every season that he's probably going to miss. And that stresses your depth so much more, because at that point, then everyone gets overextended. Many people get asked to do more than they should based on their role entering the season, and there's just so many trickle-down effects. If Westbrook and Harden stay healthy, knock on wood, here's what the Rockets have from a minutes perspective. At the center spot, I think you can pencil in Capella for 32 and Tyson Chandler for 16. Now, there will be occasional games where Tyson Chandler needs maintenance, as Nene did, or maybe they think it's a bad matchup for him, and so they could turn to Isaiah Hartenstein, or they could, as I mentioned in the Anthony Bennett discussion, they could look smaller, they could get more stretch shooting, those types of things. But generally, it's going to be fives only. The Tuck Wagon lineups with PJ Tucker moving to the five, you really don't see those a lot during the season. Last year, the 10 most used Rockets lineups, courtesy of Basketball Reference, all had a traditional center, either Capella, Nene, or Fareed. Well, in the Rocket system, Fareed's a traditional center. The point is, they were fives only. PJ Tucker, the last 2 years, only played 2% and 6% of his minutes at the center position, the data tracked by Basketball Reference. And there's a few reasons for that. For starters, he's 6'6". The Rockets have had issues at times, especially last year with the rebounding. Well, you throw a 6'6" guy in the middle, then that's going to further make your rebounding issues worse. That's not the way to help that. Beyond that, I think also the Rockets don't want to expose Tucker to the pounding over an 82-game grind, being undersized, whatever limited value there is in those Tuck Wagon lineups. And even in the playoffs, they might be less relevant moving forward because in the past, you've done the Tuck Wagon lineups as a counter to the Hamptons fives with Draymond and the previous Warriors. Now that the Warriors probably are not the Warriors anymore, I'm not sure how relevant the Tuck Wagon lineups are in the playoffs. The Clippers, the Lakers, these are teams that are a bit more traditional in terms of their size, so the hope is that that makes Clint Capella, Tyson Chandler, and your more traditional units a bit more playable. But the point is, even if you do think that you need Tucker at the five in the playoffs, over the 82-game grind, that's probably not going to happen. And so because of that, there's really not that many minutes that the Rockets can offer these guys like J.R. Smith, Luke Bamute, Vince Carter, Thabo Sefolosha. I'm sure in theory the Rockets would love to have one of these minimum guys join their team. They're accomplished, and certainly there's more proven production. There's a higher floor than guys like Ben McLemore. But the problem is these guys that have fallen through the cracks, they want to play. They want a chance. Maybe the one exception is Vince Carter because this is his last season, he said. But even in the case of Vince, he's played the last 2 years in Sacramento and Atlanta. Clearly, these guys put a priority on feeling comfortable that they're going to get minutes. And in most cases, because they want to reestablish their value for the next offseason. Well, the Rockets don't have that many minutes to give. Again, I think the minutes at the five predominantly are going to be those 48 minutes. Capella and Tyson Chandler. Rare exceptions, you'll have one of these backup bigs that they have, Hartenstein, maybe Anthony Bennett if he pans out, that type of thing. So that's 48 of your 240 minutes per game right there at the center spot occupied. Backcourt, Russell Westbrook, James Harden. Each is going to play about 36 minutes per game, assuming they're healthy. They're in the prime of their careers. You're not worried about putting them in the low 30s minutes-wise. They're not like Chris Paul at age 34. So really, at their positions, you're only going to have 24 minutes, 12 at each spot, to give out to somebody else. Now, to be clear, I know that we don't know technically who's going to be the point guard, Russell Westbrook or James Harden, and in Mike D'Antoni's system, which basically has point guards, 3-and-D wings, and rim runners, he doesn't really look at it as anywhere near as rigid as a lot of us do in terms of positions. I'm just talking from the standpoint of available minutes. The Capella spot, those minutes are spoken for, and with wherever you put Westbrook and Harden, you're only going to have 24 available minutes behind them. You have two spots in the lineup left, and I'm going to look at it as Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker's. Now, Gordon might not start. They've discussed some moving back to Daniel House, getting a bit more length, more traditional, something closer to the formula when they had Trevor Ariza, a better rebounder in there the prior season when they won 65 games and were a better defensive group. Maybe they go back to House. But either way, Gordon, I think, is going to play more minutes, or at least to start the year, will. He's more accomplished. There's a reason why he played 32 minutes per game last year. Tucker played 34. Even if we dial back Tucker and Gordon, these are the two guys at the forward spots that are probably the most accomplished and entering the season likely to get the most minutes. Even if we dial them back conservatively to, say, 31 for Tucker, let's worry about his maintenance because he turns 35 next postseason. Gordon, same thing. He's had a few nagging injuries from time to time. Let's dial Tucker back to 31 from 34 and Gordon to 29 from 32. Okay, well, 31 plus 29, that's 60 minutes of the available 96. So you have 36 minutes left behind Gordon and Tucker, and then you have 24 minutes behind Westbrook and Harden. Add 24 and 36, that's 60. That's not that much. And we haven't even talked about yet, in terms of filling out this mock rotation exercise, Daniel House and Austin Rivers, who played 25 and 27 minutes per game this past season. Even if we go ultra conservative and pencil in Rivers and House for just 20 minutes each, in this exercise, we've got Westbrook and Harden at 36 each, Capella at 32, Tucker at 31, Gordon at 29, House and Rivers at 20, and then whoever your backup center is, usually Tyson Chandler at about 15, 16. Once you do that, and that's ultra conservative, some of these guys could play more, all you've got left is about 20 minutes for whoever the ninth person is in your rotation. And my guess is that it's probably closer to 12 to 15, because some of these guys, especially against upper echelon competition, are going to go a bit more than the conservative minutes that I've laid out here for the purposes of our discussion. So the point is, that number nine spot, that's all you can really offer. And the more accomplished types, Bamute, Sefolosha, J.R. Smith, they probably want more of a clear pathway to minutes, at least right now. In their ideal world, they would have an easier path to minutes, and then they could reestablish their value for future seasons. Now, that might change later in the offseason, and if it does, if they come back to the Rockets and say they're willing to play ball within the Rockets' parameters, then great. The guarantees the Rockets have handed out to the likes of McLemore and Bennett have been minimal to none. So in the grand scheme, this is not something that prohibits the Rockets in any way from future moves. Houston can't wait around this offseason and just assume that one of these veterans, in a perfect world, we get somebody a little bit more accomplished, is going to ultimately sign. If you're General Mori, you have to take one of those guys coming into the fold as a luxury rather than something that needs to happen. You need to control what you can control. And so guys like Anthony Bennett, Ben McLemore, guys that have washed out of the league to some degree, sure, there's a lower floor, there is a higher ceiling, but beyond that, they're also a little bit more desperate. And for right now, you do need some of those guys. You do need to fill out and feel confident that, hey, I've got at least 12 guys that I can go into camp with that I feel pretty good. And of course, we haven't even talked about guys like Gary Clark, Chris Clemens, that maybe in an ideal world could contribute. But clearly, I think it's tougher for them, unless they play extraordinarily well, to get in the rotation, assuming everyone's healthy, at least right out of the chute. Trying to limit our discussion to the guys that are realistic options now. To me, that's why the McLemore and Bennett signings are happening. It's not because the Rockets necessarily view them as better than the other options. It's that they can't wait around, especially given how limited their sales pitch is in terms of minutes, and think, oh, it's going to happen. One of these guys is going to pick the Rockets. I hope they do. You can keep tracking. And if they happen to, then sure, the Rockets can get out of one of these signings or both very easily. There's no real commitment. But for now, the Rockets need to protect themselves in case one of these veterans does not pick them. And so when you combine that with the talent base, in my opinion, that's why there's a lot to like with both of these moves. Finishing up our discussion here on Tuesday, July 23rd, this is Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. We spent the first couple of segments looking at the additions of Ben McLemore, announced on Tuesday, and Anthony Bennett, former top picks in the 2013 NBA draft, essentially reclamation projects, lottery tickets, however you want to frame it. For Daryl Morey, we spent the first couple of segments looking into where they could fit in the rotation if all pans out, and of course, why the Rockets are adding guys like that instead of some of the more established types like J.R. Smith, Luke Bamute, Vince Carter, Thabo Sefolosha that might be available for the minimum right now given the fact that they're unsigned and there's not much money on the market. The issue that I have with those guys fitting in Houston is whether the Rockets can offer them the right role. Another possibility that I want to address before we close out Tuesday's show is the fact that the Rockets could be using these younger guys to buy time until a better option comes available during the season. And that could be in the form of buyouts. I think the Rockets, they went into free agency not wanting to hard cap themselves because they weren't sure of what the possibilities would be. I think they knew that at least there was potential for a big move, like what ultimately transpired with Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook, and with big moves, there's the opportunity to add salary. Now, as it turned out, there was never that perfect blend that both Daryl Morey and Tillman Fertitta would sign off on in terms of salary filler guys they could bring back in that $9 to $10 million buffer that they would have had, and ultimately it went unused. We talked about that a lot last week. However, now that you've made that big move, what it does, in my opinion, unless you re-sign Iman Shumpert, and late in July, we've still heard no rumors on that front, unless you plan on using Iman Shumpert as salary filler and re-signing him or signing and trading him, and there's been nothing on that front that I know of, then the Rockets' best chance to exceed the hard cap has now passed. So what that means is that if the Rockets can get well above the luxury tax by, say, using their non-taxpayer MLE, they would have about $5.5 million of that left, or their biannual exception, about $3.5 million per season. There's a possibility that they could use that, and even though, of course, the downside to using the non-taxpayer MLE is that you get hard-capped, well, the Rockets probably are not going to be hard-capped anyway because they're not really that close to the apron. Right now, they're at, I believe, $135 million, fifth highest payroll in the league, which is pretty high, but they do have some non-guarantees they could waive. So the point is, they've got some wiggle room. The problem is that there's not really anyone currently on the market that's worth spending your non-tax MLE on. Most of these guys, as we've been saying throughout the program, are minimum signings. So that's why we're looking at these through the prism of what can the Rockets offer relative to anybody else, because literally any team can offer the minimums. You have an unlimited supply. And so that's why minutes, role, all those things come into focus a bit more. However, as we get later in the offseason and into the season, it is possible that you could see the Rockets now that the scenarios of them going deep into the tax, the most likely path would have been either with a Shumpert sign-in trade or with taking back something in the Westbrook trade. Now that that didn't materialize, what exactly is the downside to using that non-taxpayer MLE? Sure, it hard caps you, but if the Rockets aren't going to be over that figure anyway, what difference does it make? Over half the teams in the league, by my calculations, are hard capped either because they used the non-taxpayer MLE or because they accepted a signed and traded player. Now, I'm sure some that are really skeptical can say, well, you know, if you go to the hard cap amount, which is $139 million, which certainly the Rockets using their non-taxpayer exception would move them close to, you'd go in the luxury tax. I think it's way too conspiratorial to say that Tillman Fertitta is not going to pay any luxury tax at all. When you look at the full body of work, not just the statements, because everybody says the right things, but you look at last season trying to add Jimmy Butler, offering the mid-level exception to buyouts like Markieff Morris, Wes Matthews, before pivoting to the Knight for Shumpert deal, in which they ditched salary. They tried to deal Knight for Garrett Temple and Jermichael Green, which would have kept them above the tax. I really don't think, and of course, when I say the trade for Jimmy Butler they pursued, giving up four first-round picks, it wasn't just adding salary last year. It was the fact that no way Daryl Morey is offering four first-round picks unless he had a commitment from Tillman Fertitta that he was willing to go into the tax to retain him, meaning offer the full five-year max. I don't think it's realistic to say the Rockets aren't going to pay the luxury tax. There are clearly some limits, i.e. they wouldn't take back a Patrick Patterson, just a pure salary filler, or pay the luxury taxes just for a guy that Daryl Morey might can trade down the line. We're still trying to figure out exactly where that line is. But the point is, as long as you're willing to pay a little bit in luxury tax, and I think the clear evidence suggests that they are, along with the public statements, then there's no reason not to use the non-taxpayer MLE unless you're legitimately planning to bust the hard cap. And if they don't re-sign him on Shumpert and they've let this Westbrook trade window pass, then I don't think they are. The only problem now, of course, I'm sure the Rockets wish they could turn back time and go back to July 1st and maybe spend it more aggressively on the market. Well, you can't do that. However, there is a possibility later this summer going into the year, veterans on bad teams on expiring deals, guys like certainly Andre Iguodala in Memphis, maybe the Grizzlies don't want to take in salary from somewhere else. Maybe there's Marvin Williams, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist in Charlotte, Evan Turner in Atlanta, Marcus Morris in New York. I'm focusing on forwards because that's where I think we all agree. Defense, athleticism, size, the Rockets behind PJ Tucker in particular. I think that's where they're looking for a little bit more depth. Those guys could all be buyout candidates later in the year. And I know last year, you can point out that the Rockets, you know, they offered whatever was left of their taxpayer MLE, would have pushed them back into the tax. Another reason why I don't really think that they're trying to duck the tax in all circumstances. And it wasn't enough because Markieff Morris and Wes Matthews went for what they perceived as better fits to reestablish their value in Oklahoma City and Indiana. Well, that was only about $3 million. That was the taxpayer. Now you'd be offering close to double that if the Rockets aggressively use their non-taxpayer MLE, what's left of it, about $5.5 million, on buyouts. It's not the ideal scenario. In hindsight, knowing what we know now, I wish the Rockets would have used that back in early July. However, rather than overpay someone now, I think the best play for them may be to cobble together the best minutes that you can get from the minimums. Certainly, Ben McLemore, Anthony Bennett, if they pan out, and if you can lure in another more qualified veteran minimum, the Cephalosha, J.R. Smith tier, that'd be great. But long term, I think the best way that you can fill that number 8 or number 9 spot in the rotation, be it later in the offseason. We've seen some late offseason buyouts like Dwayne Wade a couple of years ago. Maybe that's what happens with Iguodala and Memphis. We're closer to training camp. The Grizzlies say, hey, it's not worth it. We'll just cut him free. And then the Rockets, certainly there are other teams competing. But if everybody else is offering the minimum about $2 million and the Rockets have close to $6 million of their non-taxpayer MLE, that's pretty significant. That should give them a leg up. And the only reason not to spend the non-taxpayer MLE would be if you were afraid of busting through the hard cap. Well, I think now we know with the Westbrook window expiring and with Shumpert, assuming he goes unused as a trade ship, his bird rights, then there aren't many scenarios where the Rockets would bust through the hard cap. Or if they did, it'd be very minimal and they could make a couple of tweaks and get back underneath it. So we'll see what happens the remainder of the offseason. And again, Shumpert is not gone yet. I'm just guessing, based on the lack of activity, that the Rockets don't really have plans for him. But I think that's where the Rockets, and perhaps there's a little bit of indecisiveness. I think you never truly know if you're Tillman Fertitta until you have specific proposals on your desk. But I think now that you've been through this Westbrook window, what exactly is the downside of hard capping yourself if you're not really planning on busting through it anyway? That's why, in my opinion, a lot of teams did accept signed and traded players or spent the non-taxpayer MLE. It hard caps themselves, but guess what? They weren't going to spend above that anyway, so it doesn't matter. And it also wards off the questions, by the way, from a PR perspective. Fans aren't wondering, hey, why won't this owner spend more into the luxury tax? Well, no, they know they literally can't because they're hard capped and the owners can spin it as, hey, we're only hard capped because we went out and got you this accomplished player. In many respects, it's the smart move if you know you're not going to spend much, if any, beyond that amount. I wish the Rockets had fully known and recognized that on July 1st. However, it could be a rare opportunity, and no, it's not the same as last year because they have close to double the money, in which moving forward, later in the offseason, but definitely as we get to December, January, February, true buyout season in the NBA, this could have the Rockets in an advantage position relative to a lot of their competitors in terms of contenders in the West and around the entire NBA. So in terms of filling out beyond McLemore, Bennett, and whoever is on the roster right now, do I think the Rockets would like more proven production? Yes, but ultimately when you look at the market, what's left, and also the tools the Rockets have at their disposal, the best play may be for the Rockets to be patient, try and cobble together that number 9 spot as best they can with the available players and resources now, and then in terms of really filling out your roster for the playoffs, looking to the buyout market where the Rockets, assuming they use that non-taxpayer MLE, and since they're not busting through their hard cap, they certainly should be able to, then that should be able to get them a leg up to get the type of player that right now simply is not on the market with only minimums available. That's why the Rockets, for the time being, are filling out their roster with the likes of Ben McLemore and Anthony Bennett. Anyway, with that, I believe we can put a bow on today's show on this Tuesday, July 23rd, here at Locked On Rockets. And if you want more content before our next show, whenever that is, there are, of course, many ways that you can get that. First and foremost is Twitter, where I'm on there at Ben Dubose, and the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Beyond that, we've got a website, lockedonrockets.com, a Facebook account, facebook.com/lockedonrockets, email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. All of those are ways you can access prior episodes, or you can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, those types of things. I also urge you to check out Locked On NBA, which is the daily league-wide podcast on this Locked On Podcast Network. They've got plenty of talk about the Rockets, Russell Westbrook, the press conference that should be happening in the next few days. They've been talking about it the last couple of weeks, and I'm sure they will for the remainder of the offseason as well. That's Locked On NBA on this same Locked On Podcast Network. And in addition to checking out all of our Locked On shows and archives, please remember that to get this show and others every day, the best way is to subscribe. One way to do that is with Himalaya's new podcast app, which offers personally curated playlists and new features every single day. But you can also listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And I encourage you to do so and to leave 5-star reviews wherever you can. That's how we can look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model rolling here at Locked On Rockets as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, when you get in your car or you go to the gym, you can even tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets and listen to our most recent episodes that way as well. Once again, I'm Ben Dubose. Thanks to all of you for listening, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.